and somebody I've had a great chance to work with it over the last 10 years. And she's going to tell a little bit about her story and what it was really one of Jody's ideas that kind of brought about this conversation and led to this forum. So thanks, Jody.
Well, welcome again, everyone. My name is Jody Lentz. My husband, Mike, and I have a CSA vegetable farm in Star Prairie, Wisconsin. We are in our 12th year. And we started because I really, really, really wanted to farm and was lucky enough to be told about the Farm Beginnings class. We took that class, and that absolutely is what got us on the road to farming. So through the past 12 years, we've become more involved with LSP, specifically on this steering committee about how to help farmers be more viable, and also as a member of the LSP board. And
I don't know if everybody can hear you from the back. I can barely hear you here, so I don't know.
Speak it.
Stop. Usually nobody tells me this.
It's always the first time.
Stand over here. So as on the steering committee and through my work on the board and talking to farmers who are my neighbors and in my community, the question always comes up about market. Always, if we want farmers to be viable, we need more markets. So this event is happening because it's one way that we thought it could start kind of hacking away at that huge question around market. So tonight, we are going to start out with the panel, having them introduce themselves. After the panel, we'll have a short break re-welcoming people. We know that a lot of people are coming from work and will be trickling in as the evening goes on. Then we'll have some panel questions that Amy and I will be asking the panelists, and we also encourage you to be thinking of your questions, because after that we will have a meal, and then after the meal we will be pulling questions from the audience to ask the panelists. So do be thinking of that, and also during mealtime, feel free to talk to one another and the panelists. The goals for tonight are to get farmers and buyers together, to discuss new ways to sell food locally, encourage sharing of experience among farmers, help farmers improve sales beyond direct marketing, and showcase innovative marketing partnerships and highlight the approaches and the successes and the challenges. So that is what we're hoping to get to tonight. In your packet that you got when you came in, there are bios for each of the panelists. So feel free to refer to that for more information, but we will give each group about 10 minutes to introduce themselves. Okay. So, we've got up first Trent Taher and Mike Lentz.
This is going to be tough.
Sure to speak loud.
Hi, I'm Mike, Jody's husband. We have Threshing Table Farm, Star Prairie, Wisconsin. We do 230 shares on 7 acres of ground that we're using. 3.5 acres are in rest. This is our 12th season, our third season?
I think this will be our fourth.
Fourth season that we'll be selling produce to Tahoe. They purchase 130 CSA shares from us every year. So we got started, as Jody said, through LSP and Farm Beginnings, and that's the brief history of our farm.
Couple things about Tahoe or who we are. You know, we're kind of on the operational side of things. We're buying product and using it in our kitchens. I think one of the kind of questions that we want to identify is kind of how did we meet or some of that stuff. We service Hill Murray is a school in the eastern suburbs of St. Paul, which we're one of their daughters, or one of their kids, and their daughter goes to school, and that's how we were linked together. And we just kind of went from, you know, what is that excess at the end of harvest that you're trying to get rid of, to what about, you know, building a discussion throughout the season. And it started very small compared to where we are now.
Yes.
And kind of built it over time. But, you know, so about the company, you know, so we, like I said, we're on the operational side. We're a family business. We started in Minnetonka in 1981. My dad started the company. My dad's actually an immigrant from Iran, came here when he was 19. You know, and you start small and you just keep building. My brother works in the business as well, so we do have, you know, some family aspect of it. And we really like to utilize the product in really everywhere we can. Most of our activities are in schools, but as you know, schools not open during the growing, the peak at least of the growing season. So we really utilize a lot of that with our operations, like colleges and business environments that are operating year-round. And like the state capitol, for example, there's 7 locations on the capitol that we service. And any week that you go to there during the growing season, you'd be tasting product that is from the farm. Being a CSA program, it's a constant mix of items. It's not all this or all that. So you do get a taste the seasonality throughout the year. And a lot of it really starts to accent and support menu items versus becoming in its totality. So you're kind of utilizing it just as you normally would versus trying to design a program just around that, which I share because that's how we started, and we thought that was, like, cool and creative and, you know, hip hurrah or whatever, and we really found out what logistically worked better to make sure the product is used and not wasted, because we don't have operations on Saturday and Sunday. And part of that is, you know, over time, we've figured out a system, which I think is really fun and creative, that we do this over the breakfast table, and which as many things are discussed around food. So we do it now. We pick up on a Sunday. We send our own truck out, and then we bring it back. On a Monday, it all goes out, and then our operations have Monday through Friday to essentially use the product. And then next Monday, you know, we do that for 18 weeks. Actually, we've kind of snuck a couple of weeks extra ones in there depending on, but... what else? She hasn't put the 2-minute sign up yet, so I figured I could just keep going or whatever.
It's 10 minutes per.
Okay, so I was not told that.
I guess as I keep talking about. Okay, you know, I will keep talking. The Lenses do raise hogs on their land, and last year we did buy a couple of hogs, so we've incorporated some animals from them as well, working with some of their neighboring farms. We bought some chickens as well. So we really, as a company, we see having, one, you know, this concept of local is really like know your people, not necessarily a proximity discussion. We know each other well over time. But so knowing who who is actually raising it or growing it, and local can't be Minnesota local to California. Our operations are in actually 19 states. So local here and local in California doesn't align. So it has to be, you know, we really focus on the communities we operate in and building or really establishing those relationships at the local level. So we do buy beef from another farmer. It's actually Scottish Highland, really good product, grass-fed. Very expensive, you know, when you serve it to kids. We serve that in schools to K-12 kids. And there's no doubt that from a financial standpoint, there are restrictions that come with that. I'm sure many of you actually know this better than I do, but You know, it's leaner meat, so it works a little differently than if you wanted to, you know, cows ground up to ground beef. You don't use it just into burgers because it won't translate or whatever. So that becomes, you know, a variable, and then is the cost component. And distribution, you know, physically, how do we get it there? That becomes a lot of the million-dollar question between what you guys do and what we do. Is what's the middle component of that? One of the things that has allowed us to do what we do with the lenses as well as some of these other local partnerships that I referenced is we are able to distribute it through our internal system because we do have product. We actually, you know, if this is actually really cool in my opinion, but, you know, Holiday Gas Station is a client of ours. We make fresh salads and snack cups. The University of Minnesota vending, non-beverage vending, is a relationship of ours. So if you buy a sandwich out of a vending machine in the summertime, that product comes from their farm that goes to our USDA-certified kitchen. That's this central point that does a lot of production. So we utilize that internal network to make a lot of this work, but... you know, think about in a quick service environment or a vending machine at the University of Minnesota during growing season has pieces that will come out from there depending on how it works in whatever the, you know, it's what's coming off the farm and time of, like, leafy, you know, greens work great in the spring. Yeah, please.
One of the things that's really nice about us working with Tahir is they bring their chefs out to our farm. Their sites all... we'll have a chef on site. I think one of our first visits out, we were walking through our fields and garlic scapes were up. And we picked garlic scapes and some of the chefs had never tasted it. How do I use this? And the teaching aspect of where their product is actually coming from that they're using and the freshness of it is one of the things that I enjoy a lot. And Trent will bring out different chefs through the growing season and for our farm dinners that we do, and they get to experience where their product is being grown and tasted. It's fun walking through the fields with this group of chefs because they are not afraid to stick anything growing in their mouth and tasting.
So just on, like, really building on that or on that note, I didn't mention the farm dinner or any of the educational piece. There's no doubt bringing people out, having this direct, they have access to communicate, they can put their hands in the dirt, it's really cool. We do 2 farm dinners, well, at least we have this would be our third year of 2, where we'll do a spring kind of a kickoff farm dinner and then we'll do a fall kind of harvest closing and in those we utilize literally only product from the farm or the neighboring farms. We roasted a whole pig, which was a little probably ambitious last year. You know, that was raised in the farm, slaughtered on the farm, 100 feet from there is where we cooked it and ate it. Maybe a little too intimate in a way, but we really do like to do a lot of that, bring people out and help close that gap so people know where their food comes from. And we have brought students or kids out to the farm, and, you know, your garlic scape example made me think of that as one of the kids, you know, is like peas on the vine. The kid that came up with his big brother as a part of a big brother program, and he didn't know why peas were on the vine and why they were so green. And so we can utilize that relationship to help, you know, educate people that wouldn't otherwise. So I'll stop at that point.
Yeah.
So.
Thank you.
My name is Keith Hartman. I live, or I farm about 100 miles straight west of here near Gibbon, Minnesota. I grew up on a 35-cow organic dairy, and after that I went to school or college for production ag. And when I came back to the farm, I wanted to farm full-time, and during my high school years, I raised organic free-range chickens just as a side business. And currently, right now, I farm 350 acres, and I raise organic hogs and free-range chickens as well. And to back up a little bit, with my farm business and getting to know Jack here. In 2013, I answered a Craigslist ad that was posted by Jack looking for someone to raise free-range chickens.
Can you please slow down?
Oh,
yeah. Thank you.
Sorry. Yeah,
thank you.
Yep. Jack had posted an ad looking for someone to raise free-range chickens. And I said, I'd do that, and I wanted to expand in my operation. So I met with Jack, and he lived in probably 70 miles away from me at that time, and got to know him a little bit and agreed to start raising birds for him. I'm getting a little sidetracked here. I'm sorry about that. So and the big part of that was I wanted to raise animals on pasture. And in my area, it is all corn and soybean ground, highly productive ground, that I can't put animals on those pasture without having a niche market for them. And Jack believed in that market, so it was a good partnership for Jack and I to begin with. So we started that first year with 250 chickens, and Jack's business had grown since, and our relationship grew. So now I raise around 3,000 chickens for him annually and 350 organic pasture-raised hogs with Jack. So as his business grew, I grew with him, and it worked out as a very good partnership. And with me having access to land, I grow my own feed. So I raise transition organic corn, field peas, and barley, and those all get fed to the hogs in a soy-free ration. And I also raise corn and soybeans conventionally. So I have some acres of those as well. So I have a pretty broad background that way and a diverse sense of agriculture. I recently started raising some antibiotic-free hogs for the Nyman Ranch Pork Company as well to fill up my barn. So it's been working really well with that partnership. And it's been great working with Jack just to tap into more markets. If I needed to try to market all of my animals on my own, I couldn't be the scale that I'm at. So it works great where Jack can tell me how many animals he needs that year, and we plan for it, and I can focus on the production side and we can try the best animals for him, get them to the butcher shop, and then he takes them from there. So it's been a very good partnership that way.
So I'm Jack. And I started TC Farm really as a hobby farm because I wanted better tasting chicken that I couldn't find anywhere. And so we became a little hobby farm and decided to make it into a CSA where customers could subscribe like a vegetable CSA and they could say, I'll spend $50 a month or $200 a month. And then we would give them, you know, a certain amount of food each delivery that we had. But we didn't have any way to customize it, or, you know, just whatever you got, you got. And so it was really difficult, like just like a vegetable CSA, but people are apparently more picky with meat, I guess. So it was a little difficult challenge at first, and we worked through a lot of it. Initially, Betsy and I tried to basically do almost everything ourselves. We had a butcher's license, made our own sausages, we didn't do any slaughter ourselves, but we cut up all the chickens that we raised, and then we packaged them and froze them and organized at the warehouse, did all the deliveries, and pretty much went crazy. And we also had a baby at that time. So I would say it was a really bad decision to start the farm business, at least for the first many years. And then we started to realize that was unsustainable from a lifestyle perspective, which I think is pretty common in all aspects of small farming, whether you're raising vegetables, shares, or flowers, or it just gets pretty overwhelming from a lifestyle perspective. So we worked on parsing off each different piece. We found a butcher shop we were comfortable with that would work, do the organic sausages we wanted and bacon and things. And Keith started raising some chickens, and our neighbor and Amy, wherever she went, they raised some pigs for us. And that was our first no soy pigs, and they tasted amazing. So we tried to replicate that with with Keith when he started raising more of the pigs. So our big thing was just the highest quality product that we could have, and the market kind of kept growing. We've grown probably 30-40% a year. We have about 700 families that get meat directly from our group, and we try to operate more like a vertically integrated co-op from the field to the individual families that we deliver to. So I don't know where to go from there, but now it's a little more customizable. We have people can pick and choose a little bit more what they want, although it's still pretty inconvenient compared to Amazon or whatever. So people have to be pretty dedicated to buy our product. So I'm hoping we can find ways to make it a little easier for people to do that.
You guys have more time if you want it. Otherwise,
where are we located? The farms are. We work with, there's about a dozen farms now kind of in our group, so Keith is one of them, and he's a 2.5 hours southwest of here, and then everybody's kind of within that range. I live in Minnetonka now. My kids go to Hopkins School, which has a great kitchen, but our home farm was about a half hour west of the cities in Montrose, and we just transitioned that farm through the beginning farmer tax credit to another couple, right? So that was cool. They want to make a disabled vets like farm group.
To find your product, it'd be on TC Farm.
Oh, to find our product is, yeah, our website's TC Farm, like twincities.farm. And so customers join on there, and we deliver from St. Cloud to Hastings to Forest Lake to the super greater metro, basically. It's all neighborhood pickups. So people who are customers volunteer to host for their neighborhood, and we put the coolers out on their porch. There's a little video on our website about how the pickups work if you want to see that.
And my farm isn't certified organic. I do everything transitioned organic, so everything is 12 months free of commercial fertilizers and herbicides. And we're finding out that customers want to know where it came from, how it was grown, more than that certified stamp that that it would require.
Yeah, I would say our customers generally are looking for, the number one thing is what's the healthiest food for me, but there's also customers, they don't really care about that, they just want the highest quality animal welfare. And other ones that don't care about that, they just want the most environmentally friendly choice. And everybody has their thing that they care about. Some people just want the best taste. They don't care at all if it's any sort of chemicals in it. They just want the best tasting steak, and what can you do to make that? And so we're trying to say all of these things are symbiotic, and if you start cutting one corner, you kind of tip the other ones go down too. And that's kind of our niche.
Very transparent with everything that we do.
I'll see my time to catch up.
Okay, my name is Anna Lee Livingston Anderson. So I am actually one of the new Farm Beginnings organizers for LSB, but I'm here tonight with my farmer hat on. So my husband Kevin and I.
It's gonna take a little while. We're gonna slow down.
Sorry. My husband Kevin and I, we farm about an hour and a half southeast of the Twin Cities. In Stockholm, Wisconsin. And so we are beginning farmers for sure. We are going to be in our fourth season this coming year. And we grow certified organic vegetables primarily. We also do some cut flowers, dabbling in mushrooms, and we also do maple syrup. So we grow on just about less than 2 acres. We own 10 acres of my husband's bigger family farm. And so we're just kind of following a market gardener model at this point with what we're doing. We have up until this coming season been selling about half of our produce through the Hungry Turtle Farmer Cooperative in Amory, Wisconsin, which then was selling into the Twin Cities to restaurants and co-ops. They have now closed, and so we are kind of trying to figure out how to focus more locally So we had been selling about half of our stuff locally. And when I say locally, it's pretty local, like within 20 miles of our farm. And so we're trying to figure out this year how to just increase that amount that we're selling locally. So we sell to several local restaurants, a small grocery store. We do a monthly farmers market, and then we also do a lot of special orders off of the farm. So we send out a weekly availability list, and then people can order via email and then come pick up on the farm. So the two sort of innovative, also, I mean, because we're beginning farmers, I would say we're sort of throwing darts at a board right now and trying to just figure out what will work. And so we are doing a lot of different markets right now, and hopefully we'll, you know, tailor that down over time. So the two sort of innovative markets I would say that we're a part of are this Wabasha Market Share, which is an aggregated CSA share through the Wabasha Farmers Market. And then also we are a part of the Lake Pepin Local Food Group, which is just about 3 years old also. And through the Lake Pepin Local Food Group, we received a SARE USDA grant a couple of years ago that we then used to, and that grant was written to help us as a community figure out cooperative marketing models, or a model to try and implement in our community. And so we ended up using an online sales platform, Lake Pepin Local, where farmers, all of the local farmers that wanted to participate, could list what they had available. And then buyers could go on and purchase from multiple farms at one time, and have one transaction, and then also just receive one delivery. So those are sort of the more innovative markets that we're trying out. Yeah, I think that's most of my stuff.
Super. I'm Sarah George. I am a farmer in Pepin, Wisconsin. I wear lots of hats. So I'm a farmer in Pepin, Wisconsin. I'm a market manager for the Wabasha Farmers Market. I'm the vice president of the Minnesota Farmers Market Association. I'm a FSMA trainer for the Food Safety Modernization Act. I also work at a restaurant and do that does as much farm to table as they possibly can.
Which restaurant?
Harborview Cafe. And in having so many hats, I started seeing obstacles pop up for farmers selling to institutions, for institutions buying from farmers, for vendors selling at farmers markets. And I started thinking, how can we improve this system and what can we do? And so the Wabasha Farmers Market, as the manager, I wanted to encourage vendors to come. And so I was thinking outside the box on ways that we could creatively sell to the institutions. And I was super lucky because the Wabasha School District, who has Tahir as their food service, ironically, hallelujah, came to the farmer's market and said, I'd like to source product locally. How can we work with you? I began working with the food service director, and we started Wabasha Farmers Market became the first farmer's market in the state to receive a wholesale food handler's license, where we are able to aggregate produce or combine produce from multiple farms and sell it to schools, hospitals, restaurants, grocery stores, child care centers. And in doing so, we are, the farmers are already bringing the product to the market. Once we get it to the market, we've already got the relationship with the buyers, and so we're able to aggregate the produce at the farmers market and deliver it to those institutions right through the farmers market. Seeing that happen in Wabasha made me want to work with Renewing the Countryside and make that happen across the state of Minnesota. So now we are doing this at 10 farmers markets across the state. Aiken, Grand Rapids, Cook, Chisago, Elk River, Richfield, Cannon Falls, Lake City, Rochester, and Wabasha. So if any of those markets are near you, feel free to reach out to those managers. We not only did we start doing the aggregation, we realized one of the complications was the communication back and forth from the farmer and the buyer. And so we started the online sales platform that Annalie was talking about, not only at the farmer's market, but in our home community. We live about 4 miles from each other and decided, so we're doing it as a farmer's market model in Minnesota, and we're doing it as a community model in our hometown, and we're cross-selling amongst each other. So it, as we're talking throughout the evening tonight, it might get confusing because we're talking Minnesota laws, we're talking Wisconsin laws, we'll be talking like Pepin Local Food Group and the farmer's market. So don't let that overwhelm you. Feel free to shoot questions on either side. And we've had to work through the legalities of it on all sides. Prior to the aggregated, or on the online sales platform, one of the solutions that I came up with at the market was to do an aggregated market share CSA, where we're doing CSA at the farmer's market when there's produce left over. So we are combining and selling market share boxes or CSA share boxes to hospitals, the local city hall for their employees, the local jail, and we're making those stops to do that. And it's encouraging a lot of local foods getting into institutions all over. Anything else to add?
That's good. Good start.
Super.
Thank you.
Yes.
Okay. My name is Rodrigo Cala, and I have a few things. First, I'm going to take a picture.
I know who you're copying.
Nice.
I'm gonna show my wife I am working. Okay. Okay. I have a farm. I am an organic farmer. I am a Latino. I arrived to this country in 2004. I start my journey on this country working on a factory for 10 years, making horseshoes. And the only thing I learned on that company was just pushing buttons. It's a high-tech company. So one day I going to the city for looking for some produce for some Mexican dishes. And I don't find the quality what I want. So that thing was the reason why I started farming in this country. I working on Minnesota Food Association for 10 years. I buy my farm in 2008. Really early on my journey, I start finding if I have two options to see my farm like a hobby farm or a business. So as soon as I see that, I start getting trainings in another organizations. We buy a 46-acre farm. When we finish our trainings on Minnesota Food Association, I start growing produce for a CSA. I run a CSA for 3 years. I don't make any money. I lose money on CSA. Mm-hmm. The reason is you have many, many different crops to focus in.
Yep.
And it's crazy. I respect the people who do CSA. even now I try to figure it out what is the way to do money on CSA, but this is my personal opinion. I don't want to offend to nobody. That thing don't work for me. So then I focus on wholesale. I grow in four different crops. I mean, I start with 30 different crops, and then I just switch for four crops. It's broccoli, cauliflowers, heirloom tomatoes, and garlic. And the reason why I focus on these crops is because I make money on those crops. Mm-hmm. We can talk really, really poetic about farming, but the reason to doing this is because we love this, but we want to make a living.
Yep.
Doing this, I try 1,000 different ways to find a way to make some money. I working with a LEDC, it's a Latino organization. I start taking trainings with them because I need to see my farm like a business. So I start taking training with them. In one point, they open a position for me just for training farmers. I start training farmers on Minnesota. Then I working with farmers around the country. I working on Washington, Florida, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Oregon. And soon we're gonna start working with farmers on Michigan, Iowa, and Indiana too. But I see the same problem on every farm I see on this country. We can buy tractors, we can buy land, we can find workers. But the hard thing for a farmer is no matter what culture you are, is to find markets. If you don't have markets, enough markets to keep doing this, you are done. So every day we try to find a way to make some money. I working with different organizations and different businesses on different projects to try to find tools and options and diversity to doing this work easier, but it's very hard. What else I can say? I am a member of Share Ground Farmers Co-op, and the reason why we formed Share Ground in 2014 was the lack of customers. If you can see, I am Latino. it's very hard. It's very aggressive when you go into a meeting with I don't want to say this word, with white buyers. But this is the reality. I mean, when you're going to talk to them, is sometimes they give you like 5 minutes to tell the history of your farm, what products do you have. I remember the first time when I get to a meeting, I don't have a business card. Was funny because they say, can you show me your business card? I say, okay, and I start writing on a paper. Was so embarrassing for a person who really want to build a business. I, on my mind, when I working with a new farmers, I have the goal to not just train farmers to be a better farmers. I really want to train farmers to be a business people. What I can say more? Oh, I am from Mexico City too. Thank you.
I think that's one of the biggest jokes is that the great farmer from Mexico City. My name's Aaron. I've been for the last 4 years the director of Shared Ground Farmers Co-op, officially the director of finance and procurement. And Rebecca Jackson has been doing a lot, shared that management, doing sales and marketing. Yeah, just to back up a little bit, so Rodrigo was talking about, you know, being a member of Shared Ground and working
working with Latino Economic Development Center as a trainer. And so in about 2013, LEDC had been doing a lot of work with Latino farmers in Minnesota and had a fair amount of success with production. But they were having trouble finding markets. And if you don't have a market, you can't last very long, no matter how much you produce. At that same time, some many of you may know of Stone's Throw Urban Farm, a bunch of young, really intelligent, really marketing savvy McAllister grads who did really well getting into markets, but had a very tiny farm, 17 plots spread out around the Twin Cities. And so they were fairly limited in their capacity. And there's kind of a nice synergy there that LEDC and Rodrigo kind of recognized that if these guys in the city could do the marketing and the Latino growers all around the state could produce more, that was a nice synergy and the co-op was kind of started.
I'm sorry, what's LEDC?
Latino Economic Development Center. Sorry. And so that's kind of how it was formed. We consider ourselves a majority-owned Latino cooperative. There's six Latino growers who are owners, and then one white farmer as well that kind of stemmed out of that Stone's Throw group, Whetstone Farm. We're going into our sixth year. In that time, we've grown our markets from about $70,000 a year to this last year, we did about almost $400,000 in sales, which has been a fairly, in certain markets, that seems like a really small amount of growth, but I think in the local food market, I think that's been fairly, we've been fairly happy with that. You know, our markets are, we do about a quarter CSA, a quarter restaurants, quarter wholesale being mostly some of the bigger school districts in Minneapolis and St. Paul and Columbia Heights, as well as a few bigger wholesale accounts with folks like Russ Davis and H. Brooks. And then a quarter of it is co-op retail. And so we have kind of a nice diversity, I think, and that's we've seen that be very helpful over the years, depending on how the season is going for growers. About 64% of all the produce we sold last year was organically certified produce. We don't sell any of it as certified, and that's largely because a lot of the growers we really want to work with aren't certified, and we work with markets that know us and are okay with that at this point. I think when we look at the lay of the land, I think we can get to about $500,000 in sales before we have to be certified organic and keep a good, the certified organic price that we're receiving right now. Because by the time you get beyond that $500,000, we have to go into a lot bigger markets, I think, that are going to really not care so much about the personal relationship as much as some of the certifications involved. In terms of our farmers, like I said, we have seven farm owners. We've wanted to build that network as we've grown, and we've had to because we needed more produce than what those seven farms were producing. And we work with about another 30 or so partner farms as well. The last thing I'll say is one of the things that we really try to do, the reason that we started this, Rodrigo started it and the farmers started it, was really to be a way to open doors into high-end markets within the Twin Cities that are traditionally been closed to farmers of color, to black and brown farmers. And so that has been our priority, is to always seek out and work with and find more networks with black and brown farmers around Minnesota. That's largely been within the Latino community and within the Hmong community, although we've worked with some African-American farmers and some Karen farmers as well. One thing that we are really clear on is that we want to be honest about where our produce is coming from. And one of the things we realized as we were expanding is we needed more produce to keep the markets that we had and to grow the markets. And so we needed strong white partner farms that were already established that had that consistent supply for us. And we understood that was a little bit scary to be working with a lot of white farmers while also saying that we're this Latino-owned co-op. And so one of the things the co-op decided is to be just brutally honest all the time about where our product is coming from with our partner organizations, with our buyers, and with our partner farms. And so whenever we speak, we try to talk about that. So, you know, the first year we started tracking that, it was about only 36% of our produce was coming from farmers of color. That was in 2015. Last year we got up to, or in 2017 we got up to 58%, which we were very, very excited because it was also that we were growing our markets and our sales every year. And so it was not just keeping pace, it was actually growing. This year was very difficult for a lot of the farmers of color in our co-op, as it was for a lot of farmers in general. And that number unfortunately went back down to about 49%. But we like to just be honest about that.
Well, thank you, all of the panelists, for doing your great introductions. We are going to take a 5 to 10 minute break. Restrooms are straight through that door. There is coffee someplace. Feel free to stretch, and we'll be coming back again in just 10 minutes. Thank you.